democracy that you have to recognize that if we are saying we have to tackle this issue of terrorism, we need not necessarily take handbooks from the White House. I mean, Bush said that. It's either you are for us or you are against us. And you have to declare your loyalty, not to humanity, but to the American government. I think this calls for some question.
Besides the United States, some international organizations are also mounting pressure on Nigeria.
There was a threat sometimes last year of the FATF actually blacklisting Nigeria. And that would have meant some serious setbacks, not only for the financial system, but for the country as a whole.
A representative of the governor of Nigeria's central bank told participants at a conference in Lagos that Nigeria has also been under pressure from the Financial Action Task Force, FATF, to make laws against money laundering. The FATF is the economic watchdog of the Group of Seven Industrialized Nations. The FATF compels developing countries to make commercial laws which ultimately favor developed countries. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos, Nigeria.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
And it's 6 o'clock, which means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. One of the things that I think we don't do enough of is study the history. You know, study the history of all the things that are around us. Know something about it. You know something about where you come from, where you are, who the people around you are, where they come from, that kind of a thing. You know, if you live in a particular town, you should know something about the history of the town. If you live in a particular country. I don't know why that just happened. If you live in a particular country, you should know something about that country, right? I mean, you know, it sort of makes sense. In fact, you should know something about the planet. Not a lot, but something. You should know who your parents are, where they come from, that kind of a thing. You should know something about your school. You know what I'm getting at. It's just a question of doing a little bit of research, knowing something about your background, about what's going on around you and what has happened before you were around. I just think people who are educated have a better chance of changing the world in a positive way. Actually, they probably have a better chance of changing the world in a negative way, too, if that was their goal, but that's not our goal. Anyway, so this knowledge, this quest to find out something about your background, I think that should also extend into the corporate world. You know, I think people should know something about the corporate world that they're in. They should know something about the history, the background, what it all stands for, what it all means. And therefore, we're going to launch on a little crusade here, or expedition, or fact-finding mission, whatever it is you want to call it. Or maybe just a way of inspiring people to wake up and learn something. How many of you work in retail? You know, selling groceries, selling drugs legally, or, you know, just showing up every day to some mindless company, and you don't know anything about it. You just know that it's a paycheck. You just know that it's a job. And you don't really care. Well, that's kind of sad. You know, we feel that, we here, the staff here at this particular radio program, feel that you should know everything you can about the people you're working for, about the history. And you should continue to seek out knowledge and share it wherever possible. And that's what we try to do here. We're at radio station WUSB. And the USB stands for University at Stony Brook. You see, I did my homework. And knowing what the letters stand for, you know, I think that's an important thing to know in any company. Don't ask me what the W stands for, okay? I don't know. It's just all the stations east of the Mississippi have W, except for KYW in Philadelphia and KDKA in Pittsburgh, because they got there first before that rule existed. West of the Mississippi, it's K. North of the border, it's C. South of the border, it's X. But that doesn't matter, okay? Some people say W stands for wireless. I don't know. We're going to pick a company today. A company I've been seeing a lot of, actually. It's kind of annoyed me. We have these drugstores everywhere. They're just opening up on every block around here. I don't know why. I don't know what it's all about. But here's the thing, okay? They're called CVS. CVS, not CBS, CVS. And I find that nobody seems to know what CVS stands for. Nobody. It doesn't take much to look it up on the website and, in fact, see the whole history of the company. When they started back in 1963, the first CVS store selling health and beauty products opened in, guess where? Lowell, Massachusetts. And CVS stands for Consumer Value Stores. Now, we're going to take our little pulsating dial tone here. All right, turn it into a regular dial tone. And we're going to give a call to a CVS store, if we can find one. Yeah, there's one. See if they can help us here.
Good afternoon, CVS.
Yes, hi. I was hoping you could help me. I was asking a friend of mine. He didn't seem to know the answer to this. Do you know what CVS stands for?
Consumer Value Stores.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, that's something. That guy knew it right away. So CVS employees, if we're going to make a rash judgment about them, are educated about their company. I don't know. I don't know if that's something that's unique. But we're going to find out in coming weeks. If you have a company that you'd like us to check out, if you have a name that you are puzzled about as to what it stands for, send it on in to us, and we'll see if their own employees know the answer. But CVS gets high marks for knowing what CVS stands for. Of course, we called one I guess, 4,000 stores that they have all over the country. And that guy happened to save the company's reputation. All right, that's good. That's good. Today is November 11th. The 11th day of the 11th month. You know what that means? Well, around the world, that means it's Remembrance Day, or some people call it Armistice Day, and we call it Veterans Day, but it's a day to recognize the sacrifices of veterans and soldiers all around the world. But the weird thing about it is that they do it differently in many parts of the world. If you saw any of the news today, if you turned on the news, you might see some unusual things that just will float right over your head if you don't know what they mean. Around the world, people are wearing red poppies on their jackets. Not here, not in this country, but in Canada. If you have the ability to look at any kind of Canadian broadcast today, just turn it on, and you'll see everybody's wearing red poppies. Same thing in England. Prince Charles, you know, he's walking through the streets, avoiding any talk of that crisis that nobody's allowed to talk about. What do you think of that, huh? There's a crisis, there's a scandal involving Prince Charles, but nobody is allowed to talk about it, because over there in England, they have this way of clamping down on the press and preventing them from speaking about certain things if the government says so, and the government said so, so everybody knows there's a scandal, but nobody can reveal what it is. Well, here's the thing, okay? I'm not in England. I'm here in Stony Brook, which is its own republic unto itself. So I can talk about it. The problem is, I don't know what it is. I don't know what the scandal is. There are people over there in England who do know what the scandal is. They could tell me. Of course, they'd probably be breaking the law by doing that. I don't know. Can people break that particular rule? It's only the media. I'm not quite sure how heavy an iron fist they have over there. But the point is, if somebody would just tell me, I could tell other people here. And maybe the word would filter into British homes because, I guess they can't keep you from getting radio stations and listening to the internet and things like that. So, it's everyone's interest to spread scandals. Let us know something. Isn't it? I mean, that's what I thought. Anyway, of course, you can write to us with any leaks, scandals, that kind of thing, or if you have a corporation you'd like us to ask difficult questions to, otw@2600.com. You can also call us later in the program, 631-632-WUSB. That's 631-632-9872. And if we have time, we'll take phone calls. Not now. Not now. You'll time out if you call now. Call later. About 10 of, that's when we like to take phone calls. So anyway, the best way to find out about Remembrance Day, which... It's the most complicated holiday in the world, okay? Because around the world, Remembrance Day is remembering the fallen soldiers. And of course, we have Memorial Day here for that in May. And we have Veterans Day now, which is for the veterans who survived. But it's the same day as Remembrance Day or Armistice Day in other parts of the world. But I think the way they do it over in other parts of the world is a bit more touching. And it sort of gets your attention more. When you see everybody walking around with these symbols, and you see it for about a week before November 11th. Why November 11th? Okay, I'm going to read you a little... this is actually meant for children from CBBC News. That's Children's BBC. But sometimes, sometimes they explain things in such a way that it actually makes more sense to read the kids' version than the adults' version. And this is one of those times. What is Remembrance Day? The second Sunday of November is Remembrance Sunday, also known as Remembrance Day. So that would have been November 9th this year. And I actually happened to catch this by accident because I was watching BBC World and all of a sudden there was 11... Well, that's really rude. Hang on, let me turn that off. Oh, somebody moved the phone. I see. I see what's going on here. Okay. We have a different phone in here now. One that doesn't know how to shut up. Okay, well, there. I turned it down. Where was I? It's very distracting. Yes, I happened to have BBC World on, and all of a sudden it was 11 o'clock in London, and that's when they observe 2 minutes of silence on Remembrance Day every year, and it's really something to see everybody standing in the streets of London for 2 minutes being silent. At 11 a.m., men, women, and children all across Britain hold a two-minute silence to remember the millions who have died in war. The silence is usually observed at war memorials, cenotaphs, and religious services, shopping centers throughout the country. The royal family, along with top politicians and religious leaders, gather at the cenotaph in Whitehall, London, for a service. Next question, what is Armistice Day? Armistice Day is on November 11th, that's today. A two-minute silence is observed at 11 a.m. on the 11th day of the 11th month. Why? Because this is when the Great War, that was World War I. If you have history books that predate 1940 or so, you'll see many references to the Great War because there was only one at that point. But anyway, at that point, that's when the Great War came to an end in 1918, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. I don't know if they planned it that way. I don't think so, but that's just how it happened. But now this anniversary is used to remember all the people who've died in wars since World War I. It includes World War II, the Falklands War, the Gulf War, conflicts in Bosnia, Rwanda, Kosovo, and, of course, Gulf War number two. This is one holiday that's never going to die, I can tell you that right now, the way we keep going to war. Why hold a two-minute silence? The first two-minute silence was held on November 11th, 1919, when King George V asked the public to observe a silence at 11 a.m. This was 1 year after the end of World War I. He made the request so the thoughts of everyone may be concentrated on
reverent remembrance of the glorious dead. And finally, why do people wear poppies? The week before November 11th, you'll see people on the TV and in the streets wearing a poppy. Poppies are red flowers which are worn to show others that you are remembering those who died for their country. The reason poppies are used is because they are the flowers which grew on the battlefields after World War I ended. Poppies are also used to raise money for all the old soldiers who are still alive. The organization in charge of looking after older soldiers or veterans is called the British Legion. Naturally, that's for British soldiers. We have the American Legion here. Each year, volunteers will sell these poppies in the street all over Britain. And I love this last line. You can decide how much money you want to give to the poppy sellers. Yes, you can make that decision. They won't make that decision for you. You can simply choose it yourself. That's the story with today's events. If you go to www.google.co.uk, okay, or go to google.ca, which is the Canadian version, British and Canadian versions, you'll see that Google has recognized the holiday there by having a bunch of red poppies in place of the first O. So it's a holiday that really means something around the world, and it means something here too, but you know, in kind of a different way. People tend to forget about it here, and there really isn't very much. There are parades, yeah, there are parades, and there's usually, you know, stories about how little we do for veterans. That's pretty much it, you know. We talk about how little we're doing, but we don't really do any more. And I'm not saying wearing a red poppy is going to really solve much of that, but it just seems to make it more visible. So anyway, that's what today is. Remembrance Day, Armistice Day, Veterans Day. I'm a little confused myself. I'm not quite sure what the difference between the Sunday observation and the observation on the 11th is. It seems like the same observation to me. So somebody can perhaps write in and straighten it all out. I'll be sure to pass that along. We're going to be showing pictures in just a little bit. But first, we have our weekly tribute, and of course, you know what that means.
Pardon me, sir. Can I talk to you for a minute? Say, listen, I haven't eaten for a week. Could you give me a dime for a cup of coffee or something?
Nah, I ain't got no change.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. God bless you, sir. Say, listen, sir. Can I talk to you for a minute? Say, listen. My wife's having a baby, and I got to get her to the hospital. Can you give me a dime for a bus fare or something? Yeah.
Let go, ma'am, will you?
Please, sir.
Go on, get lost.
Well, thank you very much, sir. God bless you, you bald-headed fart. Excuse me, lady. Can I talk to you for a minute? Yeah, lady. Come here. No, I'm not going to hurt you. Come here, lady. Hey, listen. It's my little kid's birthday today, you know, and I don't have any money. Can you lend me a quarter to buy her a little doll or something? Please, lady.
Well, okay, there you are.
Oh, thank you very much, lady. Thank you. Say, listen. Come here, lady. Listen, lady. It's my other kid's birthday, too. Can you give me a quarter for the other kid? They're twins, you see, and I don't have any money to buy them a present or nothing, you see, lady. Please.
Okay, here.
Oh, gee, thank you very much, lady. Thank you. God bless you, lady. Thank you. Oh, pardon me, sir, you, yeah, come here, fella. Say, listen, fella.
Have you heard the word of God today?
Well, that's all right, fella.
For it is written, open up your heart and the Lord will come unto you.
Sure, partner, sure, I believe you.
He can save your soul, sir.
Yes, excuse me, partner.
You know, before,
pardon me, sir,
I was all messed up on drugs, but since I found the Lord, now I'm all messed up on the Lord.
Yeah, I can see that.
He can help you, too. Have you talked to Jesus lately?
Oh, sure. I talked to him this morning.
He would like to hear from you, sir.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll write him a letter. Listen, I got to go.
For it is written,
sir,
suffer the little children to come unto me.
Yeah, I read that.
For thine is the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah. You don't say.
Yes, sir. Jesus saves, you know.
Yeah, well, I believe that. I believe that, sir. Sure. I love him, too. Sure. Yeah. Excuse me, sir. Say, listen. Come here, partner. Yeah, you. Come here. Say, listen. I'm Father Damien. I'm collecting for the missionary church over in the islands here. I wonder if you could give me a quarter, sir. Please. Thank you very much, sir. Hey, gee, thank you. Jesus loves you, sir. Jesus loves you. Pardon me, sir. Have you heard the word of God lately? Yeah. Say, listen. Jesus loves. Oh, thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Oh, sir. Say, listen. Hey, have you heard the word of God?
Okay. Well, that's our Cheech and Chong tribute for this week. We're doing this every week as long as Tommy Chong is in prison for the ultimate crime of selling bongs. And that from the album Big Bamboo. And it was called Streets of New York, or Los Angeles, or San Francisco, or ... So that's the kind of scene you could expect to find anywhere, I guess. Comes from 1972. And we have a lot more material to play, and we intend to play it all until Tommy Chong is actually released from prison, which I guess will be a while, unfortunately. Okay, so let's have some news, I guess. It's probably the best way to continue. And then we'll show some pictures. Today is the day where we visit Kaliningrad. Or basically, I'll show you pictures of when I visited Kaliningrad over the summer. Kaliningrad being the strange part of Russia, the weird part of Russia that isn't connected to it. Yeah, it's very weird. We'll go into the history a little bit and show some pictures, and maybe you too will be inspired to go there someday. Or maybe not. Let's see what's going on in the world. Well, quite a bit. You know, there's this whole controversy going on in England right now. Not the crisis, not the scandal. This has to do with President George W. Bush, who is scheduled to visit London next week. Now, all kinds of tension is resulting between U.S. security agents and British authorities. American officials are demanding an exclusion zone around the president, while the London mayor wants to keep the city as open as possible. Police are planning a 4,000... Okay, I'm not quite sure I understand. Oh, 4 million... 4 million pounds security opera. That's what it is. Okay, I thought it was a distance. 4 million pounds is what it's going to cost to cope with an estimated 100,000 anti-war protesters. Scotland Yard says it will facilitate lawful demonstrations, but campaigners suspect they will not be allowed to march through Whitehall, Parliament Square, or the Mall. Road closures will not be revealed until the last minute for security reasons, say police. However, Mr. Livingston dismissed any notion that wide swaths of central London would be closed. The idea of some American security advisors that perhaps we should shut the whole of central London for 3 days, ignoring the economic consequences of that, I don't think that's got a chance at all. Mr. Livingstone said that the fact that no prime minister has been assassinated in nearly two centuries showed the British had always had good security. Well, you know, that's about the dumbest thing I think you could possibly say in such a situation. It's kind of, you know, bragging about... I don't know. Anyway, I guess he could get out of it because it's a prime minister. Didn't say anything about American heads of state. Anyway, it will be Mr. Bush's first visit to London since July 2001, which was met with some protest but little disruption. But in the wake of the September 11th terror attacks and large demonstrations in London against the war in Iraq, police are facing a huge security operation. Jeremy Corbyn, MP for Illington North and a Stop the War activist, told BBC Radio 4's Today program, "We've had long discussions with the police, and one gets the feeling that there is a bigger hand somewhere that is trying to prevent a march going along Whitehall and past Parliament Square. The Americans are actually running the security operation in London as well. I'm getting a bit alarmed about the degree of invasion of our capital by the Americans. The idea of closing off large parts of London to ensure that President Bush is taken well away from any protests or demonstrators seems a little insensitive and an enormous inconvenience to an awful lot of people." Metropolitan Police Commissioner Sir John Stevens said, "Because of the security implications, we won't be announcing the road closures until the last minute. We will keep those to a minimum. We must make sure London continues to operate as normally as possible." So that should be some interesting... events next week when President Bush visits London. We'll be keeping an eye on that. Over to Germany, where something really disturbing is going on. A German state has begun moves to ban Muslims from wearing headscarves in schools. The bill was proposed by the state of Baden-Württemberg following a Supreme Court ruling in September that allowed a Muslim teacher to wear a headscarf. The legislation is expected to gain approval from the state parliament early next year. Civil rights groups say a ban would hamper religious freedom, but six other states are planning similar laws. The aim of the law is to forbid state teachers from wearing symbols which could be regarded as political. Oh, God forbid. That's according to Erwin Tufel, state premier of Baden-Württemberg. The region's education minister, Annette Chavan, said the headscarf was, quote, seen as a symbol of cultural division and part of a history of repression of women, unquote. So they're going to tell the women not to do that anymore. Right. Okay. In September's ruling, the Federal Constitutional Court ruled the state could not ban a female Muslim teacher from wearing a headscarf because there was no law against it. But, of course, they can fix that, can't they? The court also said German states could ban headscarves in schools if they passed new laws. The ban will not apply in religious education classes, and, get this, Christian and Jewish symbols will not be banned. Only Muslim symbols. And three states, the states of Berlin, Hesse, and Saarland, want headscarves banned in all public services. So if you think the madness is only confined to the United States, well, it's everywhere. And we have to keep an eye on it. But speaking of madness, because we like to do that here, did you see the story last week? This armed gang of thugs held a bunch of students hostage in a school? Did you hear about this? I could not believe it. It was like Columbine all over again. Students on the floor with guns pointed at them. It was disgusting. And it was legal because it was the police doing this. That's right, the police stormed into a high school in Goose Creek, South Carolina, and made kids lie on the ground while they searched them for drugs. Guns drawn and everything, shouting, all kinds of things, you know, just like one of those raids in Iraq. Except they could understand what they were saying here and seemed pretty unbelievable. Here's the official story. After complaints from parents and students, police... It's great how they preface this, as if they asked for this kind of treatment. Police in Goose Creek, South Carolina, defended their decision... Oh, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Okay. I thought they were saying after complaints from parents and students, the police went in and did this. Because there were some complaints about drugs... But I don't think they needed that kind of a response. Anyway, the parents and students were complaining about what the police did in the school, sending a team of officers with guns drawn into a high school earlier in the week for a drug raid. And by the way, it turned up no drugs at all. The Berkeley School District, north of Charleston, South Carolina, also defended its role in the incident, which has triggered outrage among some in the community. You know, I don't think there's enough outrage. I really don't think there's enough outrage. I mean, parents are saying, you know, I really wish they hadn't done that, and leaving it at that. You know, if that had happened here, if I had kids in a school and these people burst in with guns and terrorized them in the name of the law, let's just say that police station would be in great danger right now from a mob of torch-bearing parents led by yours truly. I mean, you just cannot tolerate that kind of behavior. It doesn't matter if you're wearing a uniform. It doesn't matter if the school district says it's okay or if the government says it's okay. You can't do things like that. You can't burst into a school with guns drawn and terrorize people, terrorize innocent people. Yes, they were innocent. Stratford High School students described Wednesday's incident as frightening. They would go put a gun up to them, push them against the wall, take their book bags and search them, said Aaron Sims, 14 years old. They just came up and got my friend, not even saying anything or about what was going to happen. I was scared. He said his mother was a little angry, but his father understood and thought it was necessary. Good God. You realize, I don't know if any of you have ever been in some kind of a raid involving police or any armed gang of people. It's pretty frightening. It's pretty scary. It stays with you for the rest of your life. What kind of lesson is being taught there? Lieutenant Dave Ahrens of the Goose Creek Police Department, who really should be unemployed right now, but probably isn't, said the raid, the first the department has done at the school, or any school actually, followed a police investigation into drug activity that began after a student informed school staff about drug sales on school property. This kind of thing makes drug sales look like nothing. Which would you prefer to have, drug sales going on in some part of the school, or police running around with guns drawn? There are ways of dealing with situations, and ways not to deal with situations. Guess which one this is? Anyway, check this out. Police monitored video from school surveillance cameras for several days and, quote, observed consistent, organized drug activity. Students were posing as lookouts and concealing themselves from the cameras, unquote. Okay, now a couple of things I just got to say right here. First of all, if they saw it happening on the cameras, is that not evidence enough? Can't they see the people on the cameras doing this? Can't they question them and say, hey, look, this is what you're doing. We have evidence. You're busted. You know, that's how it should work. They know who the people are, or they can follow those people. They can follow them in real life. They can, you know, have an informant or, you know, an undercover guy follow them around and target those people. But the second part of that, students were concealing themselves from the camera. If they were concealing themselves from the cameras, how could you see that? Anyway, when the principal saw more of the same suspicious activity on the school surveillance video, he asked for the officers to respond. What a meathead. On Wednesday, 14 officers went to the school and assumed strategic positions. Within 30 seconds, officers had moved to safely secure the 107 students who were in that hallway. And during that time, some of the officers did unholster in a down-ready position so that they would be able to respond if the situation became violent. Don't they have metal detectors in all these schools now anyway? I mean, if your students are walking around packing, I think that's a worse problem than drugs. The school also designated faculty to secure the hallway to keep other students from entering. Anytime narcotics and money are involved, he said, there is the reasonable assumption that weapons will be involved. Our primary concern was the safety of the students and everyone else involved. Aaron said 12 to 14 students were placed in handcuffs or plastic flex cuffs, quote, due to their failure to respond to repeated police instructions to get on their knees with their hands on their heads, unquote. Can you imagine what those repeated police instructions must have sounded like? You ever frozen in terror? Or just couldn't believe what was happening in front of you? Anyway, no drugs were found, no arrests were made. And now the school is saying they had no knowledge that weapons would be drawn. We understand students and parents and the community's concerns about this particular search. We will work internally and with local law enforcement to be sure these issues are addressed. I would like something a little bit stronger than that. Some like mass firings and resignations and maybe even charges filed. Another 14-year-old said they kind of pushed us against the wall and started searching us. I didn't think all that was called for. Jared Weeks said he was kind of nervous but not scared because I didn't have anything to hide. He said there were a lot of drugs in the school but that this sort of raid was unnecessary. There are certain people that you know sell drugs. They could have just searched those people right on. Maybe even off school grounds, you know, not turn it into a police state. And the great thing is, you know, in the news reports they're saying, you know, we might have saved a life here. We discouraged drug use. We might have saved a life. Oh, give me a break. Might also shot somebody, too. You know, that does happen sometimes. What do you do if a kid runs? You shoot him in the back or something? What if, you know, a kid does something unpredictable? This is school, you know. It's not the real world. It's high school. Okay, so that's a little bit of madness from... You think it would be different if it happened in New York? I don't know. Maybe South Carolina is a different world. I know it's a different world, but I didn't think it was that different. Or maybe the world is just changing so fast I can't even keep up with it. Anyway, on to more cheery news. The people of Iraq may have poorer health for generations as a result of the war. That's according to a report medical charity MedAct says this year's conflict disrupted immunization programs and destroyed water systems, increasing levels of disease. Environmental degradation, smoke from oil fires are all adding to the health problems of Iraqis. According to the report, continuing insecurity in Iraq, along with the breakdown of public health services, are exacerbating the problem. Entitled Continuing Collateral Damage, the Health and Environmental Cost of War on Iraq, the report estimates that between 22,000 and 55,000 people, mainly Iraqi soldiers and civilians, have died as a direct result of the war. It says that mines and unexploded bombs continue to kill and maim. The report says that the conflict and its aftermath have put the most vulnerable in society, women, children, and the elderly, at risk. 250,000 children were not vaccinated against measles once the conflict started. Although immunization campaigns have resumed, it has not been possible to confirm if these children received their injections. Dr. Sabia Farouk, author of the charity's report, told the BBC it's mainly the ongoing violence and insecurity which, in addition to the breakdown of public health services, is posing the main risk to public health. Yes, the breakdown of public health service. They had some kind of structure. Yeah, it wasn't an ideal society. In fact, it sucked. But look at it now. Look at it now. And the fact that, our own soldiers are dying every day in increasing numbers. For what? To make a society where even more people die. As long as they don't have that dictator, yeah, everything's going to be fine. Anyway, there has been a reported increase in maternal mortality rates. Acute malnutrition has almost doubled from 4% to 8% in the last year. And there is an increase in waterborne diseases and vaccine-preventable diseases. Measuring what is happening to the Iraqi people's health is proving very difficult, the report says. The United Nations and many aid agencies have only a minimum presence in the country and so cannot carry out the data collection necessary to initiate public health policies. In its conclusion, the report recommends that the occupying powers allow the UN to play the central role in peacekeeping and in the humanitarian and reconstruction process. So that's the latest from there. Oh, and if you have a Jeep Liberty, you're in trouble. 318,000 Jeep Liberties are being recalled because of a problem with the suspension that could cause drivers to lose control. And get this, they're also recalling 10,000 2004 Chrysler Pacificas. Chrysler Pacifica, what a great name for a car. SUV, actually. Yeah, they're all falling apart. So if you have one of those, have it towed back to the dealership. Get a refund if you can. Okay, time for our pictures of the week. And today we show the part of the trip where I wound up in Kaliningrad, which it's a great place. Actually, let me read a couple pieces of mail first, and then we'll get right into the pictures. But if you want to see the pictures, you have to go online. Can't show them over the radio. We don't have that technology yet. Go online to www.2600.com/offthewall/2003 and go to October. I'm sorry, November. I don't know what it is. Yes, November now. Go to November, and this is the November 11th show if you're listening in the future. And you'll see there's a little link there for pic. Don't look at the pictures yet. Don't look at the pictures yet. Wait until I get to the pictures, because it ruins everything if you look at the pictures first. No surprises, you know? All right, and we'll get to them in a moment. This person writes in, I don't remember if you said the answer as to what the sign at the train station was, and this is a very good point. A few weeks ago, we had a little picture of what looked like a hand with a piece of paper or something. I don't know. I forget what the picture exactly looked like. But basically, this person says, it looks like it is one of those train ticket validators. You get your ticket stamp when you enter the tunnels to get to the train's track. Yeah, and we forgot to mention what that sign was. It was in Germany, I believe. That little sign indicates that this is where you cancel your ticket. In Europe, you take your train ticket and you cancel it yourself. You insert it into a machine. The machine goes kerchunk, and you have a validated ticket. If you don't do that, it doesn't matter if you have a ticket. If the inspector finds you without a validated ticket, it's like you have no ticket at all, because you could use the ticket later, you know, and validate it whenever you want. So validation means that it's in use. And this person writes in asking about, from the October 21st edition, asking if those are DirecTV dishes in picture number 11 from October 21st. I didn't even notice those pictures, but those obviously are personal satellite dishes on an apartment complex. So I guess in Eastern Europe they do have some kind of service there. I don't know what it's called. I don't know what it offers. If somebody over there wants to write in, please let us know. Okay. Let's see. And we also had a couple of the letters not related to that. This person wanted to know what the music was we played at the end of the first show in October. You said in a latter show that it was Had Enough by The Who. A friend lent me the Quadrophenia album with the track I've Had Enough. But that was not the song. I was hoping you'd be able to clear this up. Yes, I can clear this up. There are two songs by The Who with almost the same title. One is I've Had Enough, one is Had Enough. You know, I forget which is which. One's on Quadrophenia, one's on the album Who Are You. The one you're looking for is the one on the album Who Are You. And it's called, I think that one's called Had Enough, and the original one was called I've Had Enough. They don't sound anything like each other. So I can understand your consternation. I'm sorry for the confusion. And this person wants to know what the background music in the first 15 minutes of the show 2 weeks ago was. And, you know, I don't remember offhand, but I think it was Kraftwerk. I think it was Kraftwerk. So if I'm wrong, I'm sure somebody will write in to correct me. Again, our address, otw@2600.com. Now, let's. Do we have a sound for this week? The sound that indicates when you're supposed to change pictures. Oh, you're kidding. That's the sound? I don't even know what that is. Sounds like a computer malfunction. Okay, fine, fine. Doesn't matter. It's better than the face being punched, I guess. Okay, so let's go to the first picture. You don't have to. All right, we're at the first picture. Don't change anything. Don't change anything. Okay, and we are in. Where is this? Oh yes, this is a across the street from a big square in the center of Kaliningrad. Now let me tell you something about Kaliningrad. All right. It's basically a city, and it's in the middle of this region of Russia. And this region of Russia is not attached to the rest of Russia. If you look at a map, you'll see this little tiny place labeled Russia that is not the big Russia. It's next to Lithuania, and it once was part of East Prussia. In fact, the city used to be called Königsberg, and now it's called Kaliningrad. Basically, the city was taken over in 1945 after World War II by the Soviets, and it's rather dreary, I have to say. It's rather dreary. But anyway, looking across the street here, we look at a square. You can see, let's see, where is that exactly? Okay, you see the crosswalk. And you'll see a little traffic light facing to the right. Directly next to that, directly to the right of that, you will see in the distance a statue. Now, who is that a statue of? Oh, let's go to the next picture and find out. That is a statue of Lenin. That's right, there are still statues of Lenin up in quite a few places, and Kaliningrad is one of them. And that statue has been standing for quite some time, and that's in the middle of a big square. With cranes all around rebuilding things. It's interesting, you know, when I first arrived in Kaliningrad, I had no idea where I mean, I knew where I was, but I had no idea where to go. I think I might have told this story before. I was just wandering around in the rain, not understanding anything, not seeing anything. It's quite a way to get introduced to Russia. Okay, here we see a typical Russian payphone, which really looks kind of bleak right there. It's just a big metal box without any writing on it or anything. Just a big metal box with some I don't know if there are 10 buttons or 12 buttons. I think that where the star and the pound sign are, those aren't really buttons. They don't look like really they're buttons. It looks like each one is handmade, to be honest. And it's a little slot on top for you to put your coins in. And they look pretty sturdy, too. These things will probably survive anything. And that's the coin version. If you look a little closer on the payphone, you'll see that there's somebody carved in an anarchy symbol, which I guess is a sign of progress. Here we have a more modern-looking card reader phone, which still has no writing on it, at least not there anyway. If you take a bigger view of it, you'll see that there is writing on the top of the phone booth, instructions on how to make phone calls and stuff like that. But that phone at least looks a little bit more like it was in the 20th century. Okay, here we have a statue of Mother Russia. You'll see statues of Mother Russia throughout Russia. And this was in the middle of a park, very close to the Lenin statue, in fact. And that's what Mother Russia looks like if you stare at her straight on from the bottom. Pretty imposing, pretty majestic, I guess somewhat inspiring. This is a street scene in downtown Kaliningrad. The vehicle to the left is actually a bus. They have mini buses all over the place, along with regular big buses. And you can tell because they have the same sign in the lower left of the windshield that tells you the number of the bus and where it's supposedly going. In the middle of the street, though, is rather an unusual sight. That's actually why I snapped this picture. It's on the tram track, you see some kind of locomotive pulling, I think it's like a freight tram. That's the only definition I could think of. I've never saw anything like that before, and I was fortunate enough I was able to get a copy of that. You can get a closer look by clicking on it. But it looks like a locomotive pulling a freight car of some sort. Rather strange. Okay, here's a picture of the guy the town is named after, Mikhail Kalinin. Now, he was this Russian politician. He was part of the whole revolution in 1917. He was made head of state of the All-Union Central Executive Committee, that was it, from 1919 to 1938, and the Presidium of the Supreme Soviet, 1938 to 1946. This guy was known as Stalin's henchman. Yeah. Not very nice. And, you know, the guy never went to Kaliningrad either. He never even set foot in that place, but the whole region was named after him. But this is a symbol of Stalinism. And nobody has torn it down. I imagine people are afraid to do that. Near that, this is one of the first buildings I saw, actually, when I got off the bus. You see the old hammer and sickle. You see it all over the place on these rather dreary-looking buildings. There's a longer shot of that. Now, I didn't understand any of the writing. I didn't know if that was a hotel. I didn't know where I was. I had to wander around. It was raining. It was really kind of frightening. I have to say, I have to point out, though, that everybody there was friendly. It seems intimidating at first when you don't know the language and when people have a way of doing things, a rather fast-paced way, and you don't quite get it at first. But once you understand, once you settle in, you become rather comfortable. This is a typical street scene. You can see the enormous number of buses in the streets. Buses everywhere, of all sizes. And also you can see something about the model of cars. I don't really know that much about the model of cars, but a lot of older models, a lot of smoke-belching models. A lot of, like in Poland, a lot of screeching of brakes and things like that. And something else I noticed, this I noticed a lot, there must have been 8 or 9 different weddings going by, all honking their horns. That's what they do. They drive by honking their horns. You think that there's some kind of like commotion going out. You look out the window and it's just another wedding going by. I don't know. Maybe they all have weddings on the same day. I'm not sure, but it was rather interesting. And if you look at this picture too, you notice something very unusual. Very lucky I got this picture at that particular moment. You see the traffic light. It's both red and orange at the same time. Now, it's weird. I've noticed this. It seems to be the case, again, in every country except ours. But this is how they do things, okay? The light turns from green to yellow to red, okay? And then, instead of turning from red to green, it turns red and orange right before it turns green. What do you think about that? It's like extra time you get. Well, you know the light's about to change, and you can, like, you know, start moving forward. Everybody does it. I don't know why we don't. Here's a picture of an old tram, and the trams there really are very old. They make a lot of noise, too, because they're going down cobblestone streets as well. And they're probably the oldest trams I think I've seen. Okay, here we are. Here we are. This is the highlight for me. This is a building known as the House of the Soviets. The House of the Soviets. It was built, I believe, or it was started, construction started, I think, in 1963. I believe that's when it was. What the Soviets did was they took a castle that had stood there for 700 years. It was heavily damaged in the war, World War II, but it was still there. It could have been restored. But the Soviets condemned it as a sign of fascism, and they destroyed it, and they built the House of the Soviets in its place. This is one of the ugliest buildings known to mankind. It belongs here on campus. It really does. This looks like something that would have been built at Stony Brook. Except, we finish our ugly buildings. They never finished this one. Yeah, this one was never finished. It just stands there in the middle of town, empty. Of course, I took different pictures of this. You can see how monstrous it looks, a big concrete structure with obviously parts of the building that were never attached. From a distance, you can see there are bridges going from one part of it to another. And you can also see how tall it is compared to everything around it. Unbelievable. Just wondering what kinds of things would have been going on inside there. No one has ever occupied that place. And it will never be finished. In fact, it's probably going to be torn down, I would imagine. There's a transmitter on the top of it. That's about all the use that this building serves to anybody. According to a news story, looked it up before I came over here about the House of the Soviets, some want it to be pulled down, but many see the building, ugly as it may be, as a part of the city's history, and like the castle, it should be preserved. Kaliningrad's chief architect sees the importance of the building as a reminder of the past. He says, if we destroy this memorial to our recent past, then we can't get on with things. We have to get on with life. We have to breathe life through this building again. If life breathes in it, then we can sigh. Yes, we survived that difficult period. We survived and started to live again. I got to tell you, though, that architecture is just something that gives me nightmares. I don't know. I guess having it there is a reminder of some things. This kind of building, though, I don't know if you want to be reminded of at all, because it's just an ugly apartment building, and it really is dreadful looking. And it doesn't matter if you put the name Samsung on top of it. It doesn't make it any better. Just awful looking buildings. Some Russian graffiti. I don't know what it means. Maybe you do. If you do, please write us and let us know. Another old tram going through the streets. I particularly like this picture because if you do a close-up on it, you see the faces in the windows, and it looks kind of like a painting, and I just kind of like the effect that had. But that's one of those really, really old trams. World War II Memorial, just a sculpture with the letters 1945, or numbers 1945 in concrete with some flowers next to it. And the birthplace and resting place of philosopher Immanuel Kant, lived from 1724 to 1804, German philosopher, founder of critical philosophy. And of course, this was a German enclave before it was taken over by the Soviets. And there still is a big monument to Immanuel Kant there, along with statues. I'm not sure who that is. It might be him. It might not be. I'm not really sure. This was a cool-looking statue. And that was a cool-looking dog. I always take pictures of cool-looking dogs. I risk considerably by taking pictures here. I didn't know if it was a risky thing to take a picture of a train station. You know, if you do it here in the United States now, you get all kinds of dirty looks, and sometimes you get harassed by the authorities. So God knows what's going to happen to you in you know, the former Soviet Union, taking pictures of a train station. But I did it anyway. This is what it looks like, big and empty. Not very many trains at all, not very many people at all. And, you know, there's military people walking around all over the place. I imagine everybody who's enlisted in the Army just wears Army uniforms 24 hours a day. So lots of times they're kids, you know, and they don't really have any authority at all. But they still kind of scare you, especially when you first arrive in town. When you're on the train, you get snacks. They just leave snacks for you. And these are some of the snacks that that I got, you know, crackers and I think yogurt or something like that, and the candy bar. It's awfully nice, you know. I wish they would do that on Amtrak. And the final picture for today, this is what a Russian train looks like from the outside. Actually, that was a train that we were passing from our train. And I think we were stopped at a border crossing or something like that because we stood there for about an hour. And I figured, well, why not take a picture? Okay, well, if anybody has any calls to make, we have about 2 minutes to take phone calls, 631-632-9872. If not, we can just continue on with other interesting things. We'll be showing more pictures in the weeks ahead. The whole Baltic region and regular Russia, you know, big Russia, the Russia that you might have heard of. But it's kind of cool to go to these unusual places, you know, places that no one else has ever seen that you know of. And good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good, how are you?
Glad to hear it. I have a friend of mine who might be able to translate that graffiti that you took a picture of.
Okay, that'd be great.
So I'll try and see if I can get him to do that.
Yeah, just email us, because it's probably something obscene that we can't say on the air. So emailing is probably the best way to get that information out.
But, not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you a couple questions. What kind of zoom aren't you using?
Well, there's the camera I have. It's a digital ELF. I believe it's a Canon 230. It has a zoom and it has a digital zoom. There's no point using the digital zoom because you can do that yourself in Photoshop. I think the zoom is I don't know the exact number. I'd be guessing if I said any number as to what it was.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, I'm not really sure if this is the right show for it.
Uh-huh.
It might be a question for your other show.
The show that's on tomorrow night.
Am I permitted to...
You're permitted, yes, but you have to speed it up, though.
Okay, voice over IP. Cablevision's offering it. What have you heard about it?
Well, not very much. I know, you know, there's companies like Vonage and, you know, other companies out there. It's a technology that seems to be advancing pretty rapidly and driving the cost down tremendously. So I think there's a real future in that. But like we mentioned on Off the Hook, we are going to be devoting some time to that and experimenting with it. So if you learn anything, please let us know, and we'll certainly let you know on that program.
All right, that's tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it's tomorrow night.
Gotcha.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Not a problem.
That's tomorrow night, 7 p.m. on WBAI. And we'll be back again next week here on this radio station, WUSB, at 6 p.m. with another edition of Off the Wall. Again, you can write to us, OTW at 2600.com. The OTW stands for off the Wall. And we're going to go out with a piece by Roger Waters. In fact, this is a happy piece. I feel we should end on a happy note. We talk about a lot of gloom and doom, but, you know, we have the power to change things. We have the power to turn it in a positive direction. And I think if we band together, don't lose faith, believe in ourselves, the tide may very well turn. We'll see you next week. Good night.
I used to think the world was flat. Rarely threw my hat into the crowd. I felt I had used up my quota of yearning. Used to look at all the children at night in the glow of their Donald-duck light and frighten myself. Thought of my little ones burning, but oh, the tide is turning. Satellites buzzing through the endless night, exclusive to moonshots. World title fights. Jesus Christ, imagine what it must be earning. Who is the strongest? Who is the best? Who holds the aces, the east or the west? This is the crap our children are learning. Thank you. blasted technology sword. My hands of the warlords.